Aloha, everybody, and welcome to The Experience. I am your host, Jeremy Vaney. Gather around, kids. We're going to do a public service on this episode, which is we're talking to a man who suspects that he is an experiencer of the visitor kind, visitor, quote-unquote, abduction kind, but isn't certain. And so I'm sure there are a lot of people who listen who have sort of vague peripheral phenomena, maybe dreams that really don't feel like dreams, but they're really in tune with their dreams, so they should know the difference between, say, a lucid dream, an emotionally intense dream, and something that feels other entering their mind space. And yet, it's a dream, and so what do you do with that? Are you an experiencer or not? We're going to be tackling all of this and more. The and more being, should you even explore these things in your life? Should you open that Pandora's box or not? And I guess I should say up front here that at the end of this interview, which, by the way, this is a two-parter, and in the second part, we're going to get into something really fantastical. That'll be next week. But at the end of the interview, our guest John reminded me that I had said I would tell the story about women having Kundalini experiences in a hot tub. And I will tell that story. It won't be this week. It may not even be next week. But I will tell it. And I just want to apologize up front because it was clear from, I think it was Sherbet UFO. Somebody on the comment section interpreted what I said to mean that she was having these Kundalini experiences in the hot tub while I was there. And in fact, that's what John took away from it. So I said it wrong. That's not what I meant to imply. I meant to imply that I met her while in a hot tub at the Esalen Institute, and she told me about her Kundalini experiences. So it's not quite as tantalizing, I guess, as I accidentally made it sound, but tantalizing nonetheless. Clothing optional hot tub, if that helps anyone, huh? Waka, waka, waka. And yes, I chose clothing. And as Whitley made fun of, it was the equivalent of a 1950s two-piece bathing suit, I guess, and thought of it that way. But yeah, anyway, we'll talk about all that fun stuff. Maybe next week, probably not. It'll probably be in a few episodes when I'm hard up for guests and need to do another solo show. You can keep that from happening if you want. If you don't want to hear about me in a hot tub, and who does, frankly, write to me, jeremy@unknowncountry.com, and be a guest on the show. I keep hearing from people what great work we're doing here and how I need to keep it up. Well, I can't keep it up without you, so please come on the show. Be a guest. And if you would like to do a roundtable, contact me. I had one person contact me about that, and then I wrote back, and I think that was the end of the exchange. But it was only one person, so I need actually more people than one. So if that sounds like you, let's do a roundtable. All righty, let's get on with the show. But first, this brief message from our sponsor, me. If you have not checked out my website, ourundoing.com, you need to go there. Because while there is a one-time giant chunk fee, I've now broken it up into 12 monthly payments for those of you who don't have one giant chunk of money, which apparently is everybody. So you can pay it in 12 installments and then never have to pay anything again. And what this gets you is the website, quite possibly enlightenment. No guarantees there. And let's face it, with your track record, probably not going to happen. But it will also fund bringing speakers to this island, which in turn I can record and put on the website, maybe put on YouTube. We'll see what happens. But anyway, it's a self-perpetuating snowball of paying for itself and for speakers to come to the island. But of course, I don't want it to be an infinite payment plan because who needs that, right? Who needs another monthly fee forever? Not you, but you might just need the 12-month installment plan. So go to www.ourundoing.com, check out that front page. It should give you a taste of what's inside, although what's inside is actually far more robust. There's a lot of essays, a lot of video. There's a podcast coming soon. And I'm wrapping up the streamable version of my audiobook for Urgency. So if you've read Urgency, well, now you can listen to the audiobook, and the website is basically Urgency times 1,000. So it's Urgency on crack, as I like to call it. I would just love to see more people there. I'd love to see a really active forum, and I would love to see if this is actually effective for people or if it's just another thing that folks end up reading and participating in but not being transformed in any major way by. Because that's the thing, you know, obviously I can't guarantee, but that is the goal here, is can I do for you what Krishnamurti did for me, essentially, which is force your brain or your heart, force your body self-awareness to get fully, to comprehend and understand fully what's being said. And in that moment, is it a transformative moment? If that interests you, howerandoing.com is your place. If talking about whether or not your small dream and synchronous and paranormal experiences add up to being an experiencer of something larger, some larger picture, well, this is the place for you. And we're going to get to that question with John right after these messages for non-subscribers. For subscribers, let's dive right in.
The Afterlife Revolution is getting great reviews. There's a tremendous, lovely response to it, and I'm so pleased and humbled because it's an effort on the part of myself and Anne. And I love Anne so much. I want her to succeed in this incredible task that she has undertaken of returning and communicating across the bridge between the worlds. And she's really doing it. This is a real thing that's happening. Listen to some of these reviews. Anne and Whitley Strieber lay out their life's work in the most exquisitely beautiful manner. This moving book comes from the heart, the unified heart of two people who have dedicated their lives in this realm and the next to revealing the nature of consciousness as it makes its sojourn in this human form. That's just one. Here's another. I love, love this book. It's a wonderful read, especially if you lost somebody very close to you. Just incredible. Here's another one. The book shows you how to grow your soul, for lack of a better term. Through Anne's insight, Whitley shares invaluable information that could only be from the other side. So take it seriously. Go to Amazon and get Afterlife Revolution. Go on to Amazon and get the Afterlife Revolution in paperback or in Kindle format. And if you have questions or thoughts, write me at whitley@strieber.com. I'm right here. I'm ready to answer anything you ask to help you in any way I can, always.
Visit unknowncountry.com every day to get the latest news from the edge and open your mind to the high strangeness of the out there section of the website. You can follow us on Twitter simply by following Whitley Strieber, and all the latest material will be pushed to your Twitter feed. Plus, you can subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and get the latest delivered right to your inbox. UnknownCountry.com is the biggest and most popular website of its kind in the world because it has so much to offer. Open your mind. Dare the edge. Subscribers to UnknownCountry.com get so much more. A new special interview every week. Commercial-free dreamland. Above all, access to our vast archive that includes many of Whitley Strieber's most famous books in audio form. Communion, Transformation, Majestic, Superstorm, and there's even more. The Dreamland Archive goes back 10 years. It's a treasure trove of unusual information, literally unparalleled in the world, and can offer you hours and hours of truly mind-opening listening pleasure. Go to unknowncountry.com and click on the subscribe tab today. Join us. We need you, and you need us.
Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, please welcome to the program, you know him, you love him, as Brack, or Brack Yeller on the Unknown Country Forum. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you?
Good. And John's cats may make an appearance, as may mine, because we both seem to have very chatty cats. And anytime I'm out of the room with the door closed, eventually they'll start scratching on it. I don't know if you'll hear it, but John assures me that his cat will chime in at the appropriate time.
I'm certain.
Right, we're in the middle of something deep. So, okay, you had emailed me about a few things, but one of them, I guess the main concern you have is that you have some sort of peripheral experiences and synchronicities that have been coming up for you lately that lead you to believe you may be an experiencer, but you don't know what to do with that, whether or not to explore it, how to explore it. There's a lot of fear there. So I guess where should we begin? I'm going to take a skeptical angle to this.
Please do.
As a benefit to you, really. Just because when I read your email, it sounds like you're saying people from psychic friends to friends who are experiencers and so on and so forth all seem to allude that you have this in your life. And you may, but the first thing that comes to my mind is, well, if you're surrounding yourself with these people, aren't they going to think that?
Exactly. Yeah, that is the main and largest issue that I have with the whole kettle of fish, is this some kind of wishful thinking, or is this, you know, actually something and I'm just being dismissive of it? So I very much appreciate you coming at it from that point of view, because I try to do the same thing, because I don't want to set myself up as some kind of person who has, any sort of answer or any sort of certainty about what's going on there, let alone whatever may or may not be happening to me. So,
and I think
that's kind of the approach that I've taken all my life with it.
Well, good. And this will be a useful show, I think, for people, because, you know, we'll get into, if not using hypnosis, what do we use to get at these memories? And the real first question is, should you in the first place, and why do you want to? You know, these are the questions we tackle, but let's get a sense of what has gone on in your life that leads people to suspect that you're an experiencer and leads you to expect that you might be one?
Okay. Well, the first two things that probably are, I guess, the best place to start. As a child, you know, in nursery school age, I guess between like ages 5, ages 8, somewhere in there, I had two sets of recurring dreams, and I've told other people, specifically in the parachats that we used to have Wednesday nights on Unknown Country, about this. So one or two people have probably already heard this. I used to have these two sets of recurring dreams. One set of the dreams basically involved, I would fall asleep and have this dream that there was a spaceship that would land in my backyard. And instead of aliens, you would get a bunch of monsters that came out, kind of like the universal classic monsters, like, you know, Frankenstein and Dracula and a mummy and that sort of thing. And they would come out and they would play with me. And, you know, we would just kind of run around in the backyard and play and do, you know, kind of child games and stuff. And then they would pack up and leave. And I would have these dreams like, you know, two or three times a week. And I had them up until I think around the first or second grade, where I had a dream that very specifically the ship lands, the monsters get out, and one of them tells me, this is the last time you're going to see us. And I got really, really sad about that. So he gives me what I construe as one of those novelty foam hands like you get at a sporting event, like number one fan kind right. of thing. Mm-hmm. And as a child, having never really gone to a sporting event, that was like a huge deal. So I got really excited about that. And when I woke up and didn't have that on my hand, I was not only like sad because I was told these dreams were going to end and I would never see these creatures again, but I was also sad that I didn't have the little foam hand thing. A strange corollary to that, I grew up in New York. I grew up in the Hudson Valley, specifically Rockland County, in the late 70s and 80s, around the time of all of the big UFO flaps in that area, and during the time of Mr. Strieber's contact experiences when he had the cabin in that area.
Were you aware of all that as a kid?
Later on in my late childhood, I was, and I'll share that in a minute because it kind of plays into number two. So when my dad moved us down to Augusta, Georgia, in my first year of high school. So the last day that we were, you know, packed everything up from the house, we were leaving, we were getting everything in the car to go. And I was kind of wandering around in my backyard, just kind of mentally saying goodbye to the place that, you know, I thought I was going to see for the last time. And, I'm in the backyard. It's about twilight, you know, it's getting that kind of dusky time when the fireflies come out. And there is this huge cloud of fireflies that's in the spot where in my dreams the ship would always land, kind of at the back of the property on the border. And I had never seen anything like that, or really haven't since. Like, it was just a huge cloud of fireflies all centered around that spot, which, you know, I didn't really take to mean anything. It was more of a, huh, how about that sort of thing. So the second thing from childhood, there was another set of recurring dreams that I had. Full disclosure, as a child, and I suppose to this day, I'm a huge science fiction fan. So I grew up on Star Wars and Star Trek and all of that stuff. I would have this recurring dream where I would float down through the ceiling, land in my bed, and I'd pull the covers up over my head. And as soon as I pulled the covers up over my head, I'd peek out and I would see what I thought were two rows of stormtroopers come marching out of my closet, past my bed, out of the room, and go down the hallway towards my parents' room. And as a kid,
was that the dream, or was that you would wake up from the dream and see the stormtroopers?
That was in the dream. The dream would start with me going to sleep. I would wake up in the dream as floating down through the ceiling back into my bed. Okay. And then I would, in the dream, would see these stormtroopers come marching through the room. And as a kid, I always thought it was weird that there was no Darth Vader there, because as a kid, you know, there's a opening scene from Star Wars where you've got Darth Vader kind of marching onto the rebel ship with all the stormtroopers in file behind him. And my kid mind said, where's Darth Vader? Because Darth Vader should be leading these stormtroopers. If there's stormtroopers in my room, Darth Vader should be there. So eventually, once they left the room, I would get out of my bed and go into the hallway where one of the stormtroopers would stop me, and I would say, I want to go see my parents because I'm scared. And they'd say, no, go back to bed. And then I'd wake up the next morning, you know, just kind of vaguely terrified. But these dreams got so bad, and I was having them often enough that my parents, you know, basically stopped listening to me, because I'd wake up in the middle of the night and I would just immediately be afraid. Like, you know, anytime I woke up in the middle of the night, I would just automatically cry out for my parents because it was nighttime and I was scared that the stormtroopers would show up. So to this day, I have trouble sleeping at night in a perfectly dark room without any sound on. Like, I have to have a little bit of a nightlight for illumination, also because I have no night vision. So when I get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom or whatever, I end up tripping over things. But, you know, it was something that as a child, my parents were very irritated by, because I was so afraid of the dark that if I didn't sleep entirely through the night, I would wake them up and, you know, demand to sleep in their bed and just apparently be a bit of a handful, because I was that scared of being in the dark at night. And really, it was because of those dreams.
You know, this is speaking to, in one sense, at least for me, in one sense, to the fact that I neglect, and I think others neglect, which is that there are two types of fear, at least, associated with this phenomenon. One is the, you know, the deep in your marrow terror when face to face with, you know, the visitors or the whatever it is. But the other is the just general fear and paranoia one feels believing that they are being abducted. Because, you know, I had that. I had that all through, you know, at least into high school. And I used to surround myself with knives and sit on the floor when my mom would bring my sister to, you know, play rehearsal in Boston. And that was 45 minutes away and it was at night. So, you know, this is before I really suspected anything concrete about this happening in my life. Mm-hmm. It was just this fear. And also, I would have to sleep with my mom, and she didn't like that, so I would have to sleep on the floor by her bed. I just couldn't sleep in my room. And this is before anything ever walked into my room. So there is a sense of, like, real, I don't know, childhood nightmarish bleed over or something as you're going from adolescence or childhood into, you know, sort of teen adolescence.
Right.
That is separate and apart from the other. And I wonder if it's possible, I don't know, to have nightmares that are recurring. And if you are familiar with Streber or Hudson Valley or any of that, to mistake one for the other. Because I had thought that about right. myself, too. You know, I've always maintained, like, the big Vermont UFO experience was real, and everything else could be paranoia, fear, off of that, until I finally saw them, you know, in normal memory, face-to-face, and then realized, oh, yeah, okay, this is right. whatever real right. is, this is real. But anyway, I'm just throwing that out there.
Well, no, it's a valid point. I mean, as a child, my mom, well, to this day, my mom still, you know, has a more than passing familiarity with, you know, the occult and the paranormal. She was into it somewhat as a teenager. She'd kind of slacked off by the time she got married and started having kids. But, you know, my mom constantly would watch anything that she came across that had any kind of tie to the paranormal. And I, you know, she did not, I don't know that she would necessarily say that she made sure to include that as part of my upbringing, but it certainly wasn't off limits by any means. If I went up to my mom as a child, as a 5-year-old, and said, like, hey, mom, are UFOs real? She would say, oh, of course they are. So, you know, it's not so much that, like, I was bombarded with this stuff as it was that I had the ability to access it without any sort of ridicule.
Right.
So,
well, the first thing with the monsters, are those dreams that stuck with you as, you know, specifically interesting, horrifying, whatever the word is, as
it's
something
fun, more than anything
okay,
else.
Fun.
Yeah,
but did I they mean, stick out to you apart from any other type of dream throughout your life? Because actually, yeah. you're in a really good position to judge this, since you didn't have ridicule growing up, and since you were admittedly a sci-fi junkie, that you would probably have had other science fiction type dreams. And yeah. you would have been able to explore them without ridicule. And so if one has a different quality of itself than another, what do you think that is?
That's kind of the question that I'm here to ask. Because it's one of those things where I can say I've had a bunch of dreams and isn't that interesting? And anyone, depending on their own outlook on those things, will say, like, either, oh, yeah, that's fascinating, or no, it's just a dream. Calm down. So, you know, I come at it from the point where it's interesting to me and it has relevance to me, but I don't know if it necessarily means anything beyond that.
We'll be back after this.
Ever wonder what the Close Encounter experience is all about? Think you know what it's about? When you open Whitley and Ann Streber's Immortal Communion Letters, you're going to experience a whole new vision, not something being told to us by researchers and theorists, but the actual testimony of people who came face to face with this unknown. Unforgettable. And the book is only $3.99 at Streber.com.
This is Whitley Streber. You love the experience just as much as I do, and you listen to it just as much, I'll bet, as I do. And did you know that you can get the whole run of the experience if you're a subscriber to unknowncountry.com? That's right. From the first show on, you can download and keep them for yourself, for your own private use. This is copyrighted material, of course. And there's lots and lots more as well. This website is well worth your time and your money. There's nothing like unknowncountry.com in the world. So go to unknowncountry.com right now and subscribe today. Listen to the whole show and download all of this wonderful Jeremy material. It is very special stuff.
Whitley Strieber, one of the great authors of our time. War Day changed the way we think about nuclear war. Communion led millions to realize that they had encountered the visitors. Superstorm gave a word to the world that has become the byword of our time. The Key is among the most prophetic books ever written. And where can you get inside the mind that created all this? On UnknownCountry.com, where Whitley's life stories, his powerful meditations, his books, Communion, Transformation, The Secret School, and others are available in audio format, and so much more exclusive Whitley Strieber material. Join Whitley on the path to tomorrow. How? Subscribe to UnknownCountry.com today.
Welcome back.
In terms of them being dreams that I remembered as a kid is different from other dreams, because I've certainly had pretty much every type of dream that one can have at this point. I do lucid dream from time to time. I do, you know, I've had like fever dreams where I've been medicated, and I've had weird, you know, strange dreams because I've been under medication. I have a certain amount of insomnia that occasionally I will take a sleeping pill to deal with. And occasionally you'll have like that weird kind of sleeping pill dream where everything, you know, the Somanex dream where just everything doesn't make sense and it's bizarre, but you can tell it's a dream. And as a kid, I feel like I could tell that it was a dream, but it didn't have the same qualities as other dreams because it was far more interactive. And there was an internal consistency to it where I remembered having the dream the night after, or the morning after. I would remember when I had the next dream that I had done certain things in the other, like we would play the same kind of tag and stuff because that's what I knew worked with them. But the primary thing that I walked away with from those dreams was just having fun with like horror movie monsters. And as a kid, horror movie monsters never really scared me because there was always that, you know, that kind of see the zipper effect. So they were just fun movies that I used to watch, you know, like the old Godzilla movies and stuff. They were, even as a kid, they were kind of more cheesy fun than they were scary. I never had a monster that I thought of as like, you know, like the alien from the Aliens movies never showed up in those dreams. So those dreams with the monster specifically always kind of had a memory of this is you hanging out with a bunch of cool creatures, and it's super fun, which was part of the reason that I was just so sad when they ended, to the point where I think my mother had asked me, you know, why are you so sad? You seem really down this week. And I told her about like, oh, well, I was told these dreams were going to stop. And I know that I shared my dreams kind of frequently with my mom because my mom would be, you know, she would do dream interpretation on me as a kid.
Do you know what school?
Pop culture, I would think. She never really had a kind of formal training in that. My mom had a high school education and pretty much stopped there. But she was a voracious reader and made sure that I was also a voracious reader, which is one of the reasons why, you know, the paranormal ended up in my life, because that's what she was reading. So when she was done with the book, she'd hand it off to me. Okay. Which is how I ended up reading Communion when I was like 9 or 10 years old, because you know, she read this book. She's like, this is fascinating. You read this. And I read it as a child and was like, oh my God, this is terrifying.
Did you have a reaction to the cover the way so many people do?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. When I remember coming home from school one day, I must have been in like second or third grade. And my mom, who would watch a lot of TV during the day, was telling me about she had seen this guy on one of the local talk shows, and he was talking about how he had this book out about how he'd been abducted by aliens. And she was like, this sounds really fascinating, and I want to pick up this book and I want to read it as soon as I can. And I was like, oh, that sounds really cool. What's the name of the book? And she's like, I don't know. I can't remember. I don't know the guy's name, but I'll know it when I see it. And when I see it, I'll let you know. So 2-3 weeks later, we're in a Kmart in New Jersey, in Hackensack, New Jersey. I remembered it that well because it was that jarring. We're shopping for clothes and I'm bored out of my mind because I'm a kid with my mom shopping for clothes. And so I'm just kind of looking around the store. I turn around and I see a display rack with nothing but the Communion book with the face on the front cover with like no title, you know, and one of the little cardboard assembled stands for it that's, you know, got kind of the face prominently displayed on it. And I just turned around and was shocked. It was like this recognition of, oh, there's that thing. Like this is a thing that I've seen before. And I've certainly seen sketches of, the reenactment sketches that they used to do in hokey documentaries back before they had cheap CGI, of like Travis Walton's case and the Betty and Barney Hill. So I can't say that I wasn't exposed to the image of aliens in that gray style before, but I had never before looked at a picture of an alien and gone like, oh my, that's whoa. I've never had that kind of visceral reaction to that before.
I wonder if anyone's ever, maybe someone should do a short film about this or something, but if anyone's ever reported, when people first saw that face, you know, pretty much everyone that I know who's an experiencer says they reacted to it like that. Was there ever a group of people who were in the bookstore at the same time who were like, oh my God, all at once, like aghast at this book cover? Like, you never hear that group incident. And so yeah. Now I'm just picturing like just a whole bunch of people just gasping inside and keeping it to themselves, but they're all having the same reaction, you know, like 20 people walk by this thing at the same time and are like, oh my God.
I wouldn't doubt that it happened somewhere, but of course there's probably no record of that. But yeah, it was definitely something that I remembered because, you know, I tugged on my mom's shoulder and was like, hey, is this the book you were talking about? And she turned around and she's like, oh my God, yeah, that's it. She didn't have the same reaction that I did to it. Hers was more kind of like pleased because my mom kind of works on that I'll know it when I see it kind of memory recognition pattern for most of all of the stuff that she does. So she was just happy to have found the book and didn't end up buying it that day. We didn't actually get a copy of it until about a year later when it came out in paperback. I think my dad borrowed it permanently from a waiting room somewhere, at which point my mom read it and then handed it to me. And I actually got Whitley Strieber to sign it for me at one of the Dreamland festivals. So I still have this dog-eared copy of Communion, which I have to keep face down because, just the image of that face, I won't say that it sets me off, but it definitely unsettles me. There is an undercurrent of fear there that has never quite left.
Well, did it feel to you at the time that this added up to something?
Not really.
Or at what point do you put it together and go, huh, maybe there's something weird in my life?
It was in high school. After I moved down to Georgia, I made some new friends, and I was at the lunch table telling them about, for some reason, the topic of conversation got onto alien abduction, and a lot of my friends from the South, being raised good Christians, had either never heard of this or did not believe in it. So I was kind of explaining the phenomenon to them, and this is in the like early 90s, right when X-Files is starting to get big, and it's starting to kind of enter the cultural consciousness in a pop culture kind of way instead of in that kind of unsolved mysteries documentary kind of way. So I'm telling him specifically about Communion and specifically about Whitley Strieber and, and they made a movie out of it and Christopher Walken's in it. Like, it's kind of interesting. If you ever get the chance to see it, check it out. So I go home that night and lo and behold, Communion, the Christopher Walken version of the movie, is on the local TV station as the 8 o'clock movie. So I call up my friend and I'm like, hey, check it out. It's on right now. That movie that I was just telling you about earlier today. And it's in the one scene at the beginning of the movie where the first abduction is taking place and, the little alien creatures are peeking out from behind stuff and coming into the room. And my friend and I are just sitting on the phone kind of watching this together and talking about it. And he goes, oh my God, those things look like stormtroopers. At which point I just, my jaw dropped and I was just kind of sitting there like, oh, that's not what I wanted to hear. and I'd never told him about the dream with the stormtroopers. It's not really something that I talk about, except to, when this kind of subject matter comes up or to other experiencers where,
That's interesting because I had never thought of them as looking like stormtroopers before.
I had never put that together myself either because to me, they don't look like stormtroopers. To me, they look like aliens. I got the feeling that it was because after that point, that's when I started to sit down and just kind of examine, okay, well, I had these strange experiences as a kid. I had these strange experiences as a kid. Maybe there's something there, because, you know, I've definitely gravitated to this material because I personally find it fascinating. I have since I was a kid. You know, I've always found pretty much all aspects of the paranormal pretty interesting. You know, and certainly caught flack for that. So
let's freeze on this moment. Prior to this moment of, oh my God, maybe this is happening to me. Do you remember having, looking back, did you have any sort of synchronicities prior to this stormtrooper revelation that sparked it? Did you have any sort of synchronicities that you can look back and go, I think I was, that this was calling to me before this moment and I just didn't heed it until now?
Yeah.
Or did synchronicities just sort of ramp up after that? Because I'm assuming after, like, once you get the ball rolling on, oh, this is happening to me, then if there's a phenomenon in your life, it's going to be like, yep, and here are all the synchronicities to keep you interested.
Yeah, no, and that's the pattern from what I understand, but that's also the pattern that, you know, I've read about and kind of have understood is the pattern. So there's a certain question, at least for me, in keeping track of my own experiences of chicken and egg, as to, you know, whether I understood that this pattern was a thing that happens to experiencers specifically, or whether or not this was a pattern that happened to me, and then I came to realize it was a pattern that also happened to experiencers, because at best in my own personal life, it seems to have kind of happened at the same, those two realizations seem to have kind of happened at the same time. As far as synchronicities as a child, I kept having access to books and movies and documentaries and stuff like that, that I probably would not have otherwise had access to. Like that, it seemed like stuff about the paranormal kept falling in my lap. I would go to the library and just be browsing through books, you know, and then when I got bored with like the young adult section, I'd go into the adult section and just start looking at books. And, you know, the first thing I would find would be the UFO books or the ghost books or the paranormal books. When it came to, like, if I was watching TV back in the days where, you know, you had three or four stations, I would turn on the TV and there would be some documentary about UFOs on. It was just one of those things that just kind of kept popping up in my life, not as if it had any sort of agenda, but more as kind of like a touchstone, I guess, something that would come up every once in a while and remind me that it was there. There was another experience that I had as a kid, that I remembered and kind of put together in that way after the whole Stormtroopers and Communion realization, where, I was probably 7 or 8 at the time, and I was playing in the neighbor's backyard, and the neighbor's yard had this kind of copse of trees in the backyard where it was kind of, they were planted very evenly in a row of two that kind of spanned the entire stretch of the backyard. So, you know, we kind of used them as goalposts or whatever when we were back there playing as kids. But they were tall enough where they were about 4 feet off the ground before you had any limbs that would branch out. So it's not like you could hide in the trees. You could barely climb up in them. So it was still kind of this open area. And I remember one summer I was playing back there and I saw this dragonfly that was easily 2 or 3 feet long that was chasing me around. And it scared me so much that I ran back inside and, you know, told my mom about it. Like, there's a giant dragonfly. You got to come and, you know, help me deal with this because it's terrifying. And of course, my mom was like, you know, whatever, go back outside. You're just getting carried away with yourself, you know. And years later, I was reading a book by Dean Koontz called Strangers. I don't know if you're familiar with it at all.
No.
It's basically, it's got kind of overtones of alien abduction to it, but alien abduction ends up not being the ultimate cause. There's a scene early in the book where one of the characters is looking out his bathroom window and has a flashback of a memory of someone in a leather motorcycle jacket and helmet reaching out for him in a menacing way. And as I read that, I flashed back to that incident with the dragonfly, that I remember the dragonfly also reaching out for me, which didn't make any sense because dragonflies don't have arms that you can reach out and grab somebody with. So it caused me to kind of go back and think about that a little bit more because it wasn't something that I had thought of in years. And I remember specifically being terrified of the dragonfly because I could see its reflection in my eyes, or my reflection in its eyes. And when I stopped and thought about that, I was like, wait a minute, even if this dragonfly was, you know, 3 foot long, it has those faceted eyes. You can't really see a reflection in that. So where am I getting this idea of seeing my own reflection in its eyes and being terrified by that from? And that, you know, that experience happened in the middle of a summer day, you know, bright daylight in my neighbor's backyard, which, you know, anyone looking out of any of the nearby houses would have been able to see me. So I don't want to go, I don't want to tell myself that something definitely happened there, but I've heard of stranger things having happened in broad daylight in the middle of people. So I can't necessarily rule it out.
And that cliffhanger and jingle mean that this is all the time we have on this week's The Experience. Next week, we will pick up the conversation where we left off. And if you're a non-subscriber and you only heard half of this episode, well, you're probably going to want to hear the other half. But we're on a completely different topic next week, so you will not have had to have listened to this whole episode in order to not be lost next week. But don't let that be your excuse not to click that subscribe tab and get this and all episodes of The Experience and Dreamland complete and commercial free. If you're a subscriber, thank you so much for subscribing. We look forward to your comments. And by we, I mean me and the birds out there. All right. I thought I meant the royal we. But I guess I really meant the birds. All right. Until next week, thank you all for listening. Take care.